Heels. This is a continuation of our October 12th, 2022 oral argument calendar. We are now appearing on the Zoom platform. I'm joined this morning by my colleagues, Judges Siegel and Kirk. And the case that we are about to hear is in the matter of the revenue of Robert P. Weber, case A22-0787. And I'd like to welcome the attorneys who are with us this morning. This will, in all respects, be like an in-person argument, except that we aren't in person. The appellant will have 15 minutes to present oral argument. Respondent will have 15 minutes to present, and then the appellant will have a 5-minute rebuttal. Just as in the courtroom, we are keeping track of your time. Counsel, do you both see on the screen the clock?
Okay. Yes.
So that will count your time down, and I'm glad that you can both see that. We are making an audio recording of the arguments this morning, including this one, and in order to help us make a good quality recording of the argument, I ask you both to please identify yourself and the party you're representing before you begin your arguments. And also, please let us know if you have any preference as to how we address you. We are ready to go at this point. So we'll turn to counsel for the appellant. You may proceed.
Thank you. My name is Robert Weber, and I'm representing myself in this matter. This case began in January 2020 and continues to this day. During this period of time, my son Henry was removed from my home for 400 days. He was placed in 6 different placements in 5 different counties. In his final placement, he was repeatedly physically assaulted and sexually assaulted. Then he was returned to me in April 2021, and Carver County took over $16,000 of my state tax overpayment to pay for the care that my son experienced. The narrow issue before this court today involves revenue recapture, which is at Minnesota Statutes Chapter 270A. Carver County says that I owe them over $16,000. I dispute this debt claim. I seek an administrative hearing to challenge the validity of the debt pursuant to the statute. The ALJ dismissed the proceeding and said that the matter is moot. So the narrow issue before you today is whether the ALJ made an error in granting summary disposition. I ask that this court remand the case and order Carver County to comply with discovery, which they have never complied with, and to order an administrative hearing on the validity of the debt claim. But more importantly than the revenue recapture case is the unlawful conduct of Carver County in the Child Protection and CHIPS proceeding. Pursuant to Appellate Rule 103.04, I ask that this court consider Carver County's significant violations of due process as the more important issue in this case.
Mr. Weber, if I could just interrupt, you never appealed the CHIPS adjudication in this case or the CHIP proceedings. So I'm a little bit unclear about how that issue is technically before us today.
Yeah, that's right. So a little bit of background. It's true. I did try to appeal the CHIPS order. I hired an attorney named Mallory Stoll. She filed the CHIPS appeal, but it was premature because we had also filed a motion for a new trial. And so the Court of Appeals said that the notice to appeal was premature. And then subsequently, Mallory Stoll withdrew from representing me. And so there was no appeal on the CHIPS order. However, the reason this is a very important matter is that I believe that the Court of Appeals has abdicated too much jurisdiction. And so you will never hear about the abuse of the imminent danger provisions and the ex parte petition process because all of those occur in situations where there's no final order. So what happened in this case is that Carver County declared my son to be in imminent danger and filed an ex parte petition and removed my son from my care. And even if I had appealed that order, you guys would have dismissed the appeal and said it was premature because there's no final order. And what happened in my son's case is that he was at Prairie Care, surrounded by dozens of mandated reporters, none of whom reported abuse or neglect, but he was removed through an ex parte petition, which is the policy and practice of Carver County, because they just declare imminent danger whenever they want. And then they go to the EPC and the judge, in this case, Judge Eric Broughton, says, I'm not going to listen to any of the allegations because I must assume that they are true because it was filed as an ex parte petition declaring imminent danger. And so you will never hear about these cases, which are happening all the time. And that's why I want to bring this issue up. And I believe that appellate rule 103.0.
Never mind. Sorry. Proceed. Go ahead.
So I want this as an probably the most important aspect of this case. And I believe that pursuant to appellate rule 103.04, this court may review any other matter as the interest of justice requires. I believe that the precedent from November 2021 in Jepson versus Pope County, where the Minnesota Supreme Court held that county social workers are subject to a due care standard, that there's ample evidence on the record here to be able to review the conduct of Carver County and to call them out for failing to maintain due care. I believe that all over the state of Minnesota, county social workers are failing parents and children. In the Jepson case, Pope County officials brazenly ignored the legal requirement to notify law enforcement. They just said, we don't do it. And the state Supreme Court said that that was not acceptable and that county social workers pursuant to the state law are subject to a due care standard. This past summer, the state legislative auditor's report, there was a report issued highly critical of the way in which child protection matters are handled in this state due to the vast disparities among the counties in CHIPS and child removal. I believe one of the reasons that we have an abysmal child protection system in this state is because of the unfortunate precedents of this court, the Court of Appeals, for abdicating a significant amount of what goes on in child protection and basically saying, we don't care. We don't care what happens to children prior to a CHIPS order. My CHIPS trial was 11 months from when my son was removed. It's supposed to be in 60 days. I didn't even show up for the CHIPS trial because I was so disgusted by the corruption of the proceedings. I asked for a pretrial hearing to discuss issues related to child testimony. They didn't grant it. So in this case, I didn't even show up for the trial. I didn't even comply with the CHIPS order, but my son was returned to me. They didn't file a permanency petition in the required period of time. I filed a motion to dismiss because they didn't comply with the permanency timeline, which I was told was a red line in the case. And Judge Broughton said, well, they're working on it, as if compliance with a statutory deadline working on it is sufficient. So what happened in my case is that for 400 days, my son was held outside of my care. Carver County filed two ex parte CHIPS petitions against me, one ex parte protective order against me, which barred me from seeing my son or speaking to him for 5 consecutive months. During the time that he was in that group residential facility, he was brutalized through physical violence on many occasions. Those aren't my words. Those are the words of the independent guardian ad litem in her final report. She said he was brutalized through physical violence on many occasions. He was sexually assaulted. He was ordered home to me, and then Carver County used the revenue recapture provisions and took over $16,000 of my money, even though I had repeatedly requested a hearing pursuant to the statute. Of note, Ms. Carter, Sierra Carter, myself and my son were the only non-white people involved in the entire proceedings in the case. All Carver County social workers, all Carver County attorneys, all court administration, and of course the trial court judge, Eric Broughton, they were all involved in this case and took no interest in the violations of due process. I filed many motions which were just completely ignored, but from the perspective of the Court of Appeals, none of it would matter because it was all pre-CHIPS. Because basically your precedent says, we don't care what happens to children and parents prior to a CHIPS order, even though it took 11 months for them to do my CHIPS trial. They did the out-of-home placement plan 6 months after they took my child. It's supposed to be in 30 days. And the out-of-home placement plan violated all kinds of regulatory and process requirements. And I brought motions about that, but everybody ignored it. And so what's the most important thing to me in this case is that you guys, the Court of Appeals, pay attention to what's going on in Carver County and set some standards, particularly on the definition of imminent danger and on the role of trial court judges. In my case, what happened is that the social worker filed this CHIPS petition and she made a material lie on the petition. She said that Prairie Care would not release my son to me. That was a lie and was contradicted by evidence that was behind the CHIPS petition because the discharge paperwork said that Prairie Care took no position. Now, because nobody reads anything in these cases, Judge Broughton, he sees this thing in the CHIPS petition and it's on the record in the transcript. I got the transcript. He says, wow, I've never heard of this happening before, that Prairie Care won't release a child to his parents. And then when my attorney, Edward Hsu, who's now a judge in Ramsey County, Judge Hsu, pointed out that this was a misrepresentation, then Judge Broughton said, well, it doesn't matter because I have to assume all the allegations are true because this was filed as an ex parte petition and they declared it was imminent danger. And then he refused to give us an evidentiary hearing on that. And so never was the issue of whether my son was ever in imminent danger part of the case. The entire case was basically, we have taken your child and you must comply with us. And so I would argue you shouldn't have taken my child. And they would say, well, that doesn't matter now. We have your child now. And you guys don't know, but this is how child protection works in Carver County. They just take your child, but everyone caves because normal people just cave in. If they take your child, you're like, crap, I'll just do whatever they say. I'm not a normal person. I'm a difficult person, but I am not a child abuser. And so when Carver County took my child, I refused to allow them to dictate to me what I needed to do to get my child back. I just kept insisting that I didn't do anything wrong. And they just held my kid for 400 days. And they just kept throwing more and more at me until finally he was, I mean, in a weird way, thankfully he was sexually assaulted, because then Judge Broughton finally got disgusted with the proceedings. And then as soon as Henry was ordered home, then Carver County dismissed their own petition. They had gotten a CHIPS order against me. I didn't comply with any aspects of the CHIPS order. They argued that he should stay in the facility where he was physically and sexually assaulted. And then as soon as he was ordered home, then they said, okay, we dismiss the case. So the criminal law equivalent of this would be them taking me, putting me in jail for 400 days and asking me every week if I accept a no, I don't accept a plea bargain. 400 days, they just let me go because there was never a case to begin with. But this is what the precedent hearing Mr. Connes explain what has occurred in Carver County, because they never feel that they have to explain anything. They just show up and they say, you do what we say. And there is a link between this. You see, pre-deprivation due process is not something they take seriously. So they accuse me and then they take my kid. Then they say, you owe us this money. And I say, well, we need a hearing. And then they just take my money. This is how they operate. You, the Court of this is what this case is about.
Counsel, whether you have a meritorious claim as it relates to the CHIPS proceeding is one issue. The case we have before us only involves a financial issue of revenue recapture. There's no basis for our court to look beyond that. And if the money has been returned, why would there be anything we can say on this case? Because that's really the only impact we can have.
Sure. I understand your position. And that was the position of the ALJ. They paid you back. And so the case is moot. That's wrong. That's not correct thinking. The reason, the fact that they took my money unlawfully and then returned it to me is not dispositive on whether I should get a hearing. The purpose of the hearing is to dispute the validity of the claim. The ALJ's order says that there's no point in having a case, it's moot, because they're not collecting on it now. First of all, there's absolutely no evidence on the record that that's true. There is plenty of evidence that they maintain that the claim is valid, and I dispute the claim. The purpose of the revenue recapture hearing is to challenge the validity of the claim, except part of the way I'm going to challenge the validity of the claim is that my son should have never been removed in the first place. But Carver County does not want to have a hearing about that. Think about that. They accused me of putting my son in imminent danger. I'm supposedly the child abuser, but they don't want to have anything to do with that. They don't want to have to ever explain why they removed my son, why they placed him in a facility where he was brutalized on multiple occasions through physical violence and sexually assaulted. And then bizarrely, the ALJ said, even if you had a hearing and even if you showed that there was no valid debt, Carver County could go perfect the claim in another place. Well, then what is the point of a pre-deprivation hearing in revenue recapture if res judicata does not attach to that decision? There's no way that either I or Carver County can go anywhere else after we challenge that debt. If they are allowed to maintain that the debt is valid, it hangs over my head for 5 years. I own my own law practice. If I go out and get a loan, do I have to disclose that I have a liability of $16,000? I dispute that liability, but it would be committing bank fraud if I don't disclose that as a liability. I have a right under the law to challenge the validity of the debt. They maintain there's a valid debt. That's the purpose of the hearing. They shouldn't have taken the money in the first place. They shouldn't be rewarded for violating the law and not have a hearing. So it's not just that they gave the money back. That's just low-level thinking. It's the fact that I am challenging the debt claim. They say there's a valid debt. Their whole brief is going on and on about the court orders that I violated. Now, there's not a single court order that says I owe $16,000. There are court orders that say that I should cooperate with the financial aspects of the case, but I disputed the whole case. If you accept Carver County's premise, they can take your child for any reason, ship him around the state, and send you a bill, and there's nothing you can do about it, even if they dismiss the case. So their position is I still owe the money.
Mr. Weber, your time is up. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Counsel for a respondent, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Assistant Carver County Attorney Patrick Connis appearing on behalf of Carver County. Your Honor, the county respectfully asks this court to affirm the Office of Administrative Hearings May 13th order granting the county summary disposition. Your Honor, it's kind of hard in the legal community. We're not really well trained to talk about when we like something, we're much better trying to point out errors and defects and things. But the upshot is the Office of Administrative Hearings order, it's a good order. The order lays out the issues. The order lays out.
But Mr. Connis, how do you respond to Mr. Weber's argument that what's to stop the county from resubmitting the $16,000 to the revenue department next year? I mean, in that sense, I'm, you know, is it really moot? Has the county said, no, we will not do that again. We will never ask the revenue department to recapture the $16,000.
I don't believe that's in the record, Your Honor.
Okay, so then is it really moot then?
It is moot, Your Honor, because...
Well, no, not really. I mean, why not? You tell me why not.
Well, I think the Office of Administrative Hearings order lays it out really well. I think it establishes that the remedy provided by statute had been fulfilled. And because that had happened, the there was no other relief that the Office of Administrative Hearings could give out. I think the administrative law judge did a good job in explaining in the order that contesting the validity of the debt is a defense. It's not a claim. Your Honor, since we've already had an allusion to criminal law, let me try this analogy and see if it helps. Your Honor, the way I've gotten my head around this, the moot part of it is, it feels to me sort of like civil forfeitures, forfeitures that are tied to DWI cases. And in that situation, somebody's arrested, the vehicle is seized, and those are two different court cases, correct? But if for whatever reason, the criminal complaint is dismissed and then the government returns the vehicle, the owner of the vehicle or the driver of the vehicle can't say, well, now that I have my vehicle, I still want to challenge the implied consent process. That is moot.
Yeah, but the debt is still there. So, you know, I mean, I get what you're saying. But if Carver County just said, we will never try to recapture this debt through the revenue department again, then that's one thing. And I know he didn't appeal the CHIPS orders, but again, he could contest the amount, right? Even if, you know, you're claiming that he forfeited the right to challenge the orders themselves in the CHIPS case by not appealing?
I'm not sure I quite understand the question there. He can challenge the amount. Can you explain that a little bit more by telling me, like, what context we mean by challenge the amount?
There is still a case or controversy, if you will, to the extent that the county can go back to the revenue department next year and make them go through all this again. I mean, that's what I'm pondering in my mind. I don't know how I think about that, but I think that's part of the argument. I don't know.
I agree, Your Honor. That is part of the argument. I think, however, the statute is written the way the statute is written. I also think that, let me try this a different way. Your Honor,
I guess I'm mystified by the county's conduct here. Does the county think it's owed $16,000 some dollars or not? I mean, you repaid it, but so correct. Then what? I mean, I guess I don't understand the county's whole position here.
Well, the county's whole position is twofold, Your Honor. One is that the Office of Administrative Hearings issued a good order. It was correct when it said it was moot. The other thing is that if I just so I can't be, let me try. Okay. So I believe that the Office of Administrative Hearing is correct in saying it's moot. If I had one critique for the May 13th order, it would be that the ALJ did not reach the issue of preclusion. When we talk about the amount owed or the validity of the debt, those are goes to issues that are directly at the heart of the child protection matter. And you know, ironically, I think the case that that the realtor submitted last week actually supports the county's position that there was a process. The realtor was a participant in that process. And the process is now over. If the realtor wanted to contest the validity the appropriateness of the out-of-home placement, which he argues in his brief, then the CHIPS case was the place to do that. And I, you know, it's not for me to Monday morning quarterback. You know, I think one thing that I agree with the realtor is his CHIPS case is remarkable. No, I think he's right. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've done child protection law, but I've never seen a result like that.
I'm sorry. So you mean the relator, not the realtor? Me confused.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yes,
That's okay. That's okay.
I'm having a bit of a dyslexic moment.
Continue.
There.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. So I think this is moot. I think when you examine the cases where the courts take up the moot issue, the issue is being reviewed in the context of the original case. In one of the cases cited by Mr. Weber, we're talking about, a child's, the term of a child's probation, or we're talking about a civil commitment, or we're talking about voting rights, or we're talking about, a child protection case. But the moot issue is always in the relation to the original case. It's not in a secondary case. And that's why I think that this actually does have some similarities to the Slavin versus Engstrom cases.
But does the county plan on going after this money in the future?
That's not the record, Your Honor.
Okay. Why did you give it back if you didn't?
Well, that might be the record. Without disclosing confidentialities, I think there are emails that suggest that the county thought that giving the money back would resolve the issue. And so the county was surprised when, after receiving the money and cashing the county's check, that then Mr. Weber decided that he was in fact not done.
But couldn't you just now say you're not going to ever pursue that claim? I mean, you had the money, you gave it back. If you had a legitimate claim, why would you have given it back?
Well, Your Honor, I think sometimes people settle cases because they believe that, not because there is something wrong with their claim, but because they believe in the cost benefit analysis of it all, that giving the money back would be less of a headache than going ahead with the litigation.
But this is a little different than a settlement, because as I think you acknowledged with Judge Kirk, there's been no promise to forever drop the claim.
Well, as I said, the county thought we had resolved this issue. And then the county feels that Mr. Weber, once he had the benefit of the bargain, decided not to go ahead and resolve the matter. And that's when the county filed the summary disposition motion.
Do you have a stipulation or an exchange of letters or something on the record that would indicate what the agreement was?
Your Honor, a couple of things. I do believe the email chain is in the record, and if it's not, I apologize. I think one thing that's a little different, I think one thing where my analogy runs into issues is the county decided to return the money without having anything signed or anything in writing.
And what was the reason for that?
I don't believe that is in the record, Your Honor, but I think my feeling is that the county believed that was the most, did a cost benefit analysis and did not want to continue to litigate the issue.
Okay, well then why not waive your right to ever litigate it in the future?
Well, because we're still fighting about it now, Your Honor.
No, but if you'd agreed you'd never try to collect it through revenue capture in the future,
I'm sorry, I interrupted. Can you finish your question, please?
Wouldn't the whole issue have been resolved if you had paid the money back and indicated that you the county would never pursue this reimbursement or revenue recapture in the future?
Well, that's an interesting question, Your Honor, but that's not the situation that we're in. The situation that we're in is the county thought it was moving towards resolution. If the county, you know, and it's difficult for me because I'm the lawyer, I'm not a policymaker, so I don't get to make these decisions. But I think the record reflects that it would not be unreasonable for a county policymaker to think that even if it waived it, then that would give Mr. Weber a whole other set of things then to complain about.
So can if it's okay if I interject with a slightly different question?
Please.
Is the standard for mootness in front of an ALJ under the statute for the Office of Administrative Hearings, is that the same standard that we would apply as a state court of appeals?
Well,
or is it somehow, are they more constrained by statute somehow?
I am not aware of any other constraint, and I was certainly proceeding upon the premise that the case law that applies to the appellate courts and to district courts also applies to the Office of Administrative Hearings. Your Honors, just circling back to Mr. Weber's his argument, it's the county's position that there certainly is not a record to make the sort of findings that Mr. Weber is asking for. Also, those issues were not brought up before. And so in the county certainly realizes this court can take up issues of the matter of justice, but I don't think the record would support such a decision. I see that my time is running low. So without any other questions, I will just reiterate that I am grateful for being here and allow this opportunity. And once again, I am going to ask this court respectfully to affirm the Office of Administrative Hearings order granting the county summary disposition. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll just get the clock reset for you here, Mr. Weber, just one moment. Okay, you may begin your rebuttal.
Thank you. So first point I want to make is people are questioning, why didn't you appeal this? The last order in the case was the order returning my son to me in May 2021. Why would I appeal that? I don't even think you guys would have accepted the appeal when I was getting my son back and saying, well, if there's some future bill, I'm challenging the bill. They hadn't taken the money at that time, and I had been requesting a hearing repeatedly. They took the money in October 2021. So this idea like, well, you didn't appeal the bill. First of all, there was no bill. Second, the reason he doesn't say, and it's kind of embarrassing on the part of Carver County, but I did a Data Practices Act request with the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and that information came after the motion for summary disposition. The Carver County officials admitted to the State Department of Revenue that they violated the Revenue Recapture Act by not giving me a timely pre-deprivation hearing because the statute requires a hearing within 30 days. And the county signs a service agreement with the State Department of Revenue. And if they violate the agreement, they can be suspended for 90 days. So one of the reasons I want to have a hearing is to have on the record that they violated the statute because that is a basis to invalidate the debt pursuant to the service agreement. And it also subjects them to this suspension, which they absolutely do not want. What has occurred here is catching someone robbing, taking your TV, and then they give you their TV, your TV back, and they're like, okay, it's all good. I gave you the TV back. No, the case isn't done when the robber shows up and takes your TV and gives it back and then says, well, I might rob you again tomorrow. I mean, there's no basis for not having the hearing here. And he doesn't even attempt to explain it. I mean, he just sort of gives you these vague things. They weren't going to give the money back. I asked for the money back immediately and they weren't going to give it back. And there's all kinds of suspicious things about this money. They told the county, they told the state that I owed them $16,000. And then they immediately sent me a check for $6,000. And one of the reasons I was enraged was then they sent me $10,000 and they're like, oh, by the way, we sent you the $6,000 in the fall. Remember that? So they were misrepresenting what the bill was to the state. They don't want any of that examined. That's the whole point of how Carver County operates. They don't want anyone to know why they take children. They don't want anyone to know why they take money. And they don't want any kind of hearing on the merits about that. And so they're upset that I'm pursuing this. And there's no way, because it's a closed loop in Carver County. Judge Broughton is a potted plant when it comes to these hearings at the EPC. He believes that his role is to say, oh, it's a prima facie case. I don't care what the facts are. I don't care if there's misrepresentations. They claimed imminent danger. And that's why I cited to Slavin versus Engstrom, because federal judge Ann Montgomery points out the very dubious constitutionality of EPC hearings, because it is not a meaningful hearing in terms of due process. You are not able to present evidence. And what has occurred in the state and what definitely occurs in Carver County is a vacuum from the lack of leadership and abdication of jurisdiction by your court. You're basically saying, we don't care what happens in EPCs. People can have their kids taken away. And so what happens all the time is kids get taken away and parents freak out and they cave because they don't want their kid taken away. There's no merit to the claims, but they cave. And believe me, I had multiple lawyers who are representing me. One of the reasons Mallory Stoll withdrew from the CHIPS appeal is she was insisting that I cooperate with the county, because that's how child protection is structured in this state. And you guys just don't realize it, that there's a total imbalance. And who does this affect? It affects brown and black people, poor people in this state who are not obnoxious like me. I am an obnoxious person. I was very obnoxious to county social workers during the whole proceedings because I knew my rights and I wasn't going to back down to them. And now I'm asking you guys to look through this record. There's nothing in Mr. Conis's 15 minutes that should persuade you that I'm wrong. All the arguments that I made still remain valid. Everyone here is tracking the issues. If they want me to go away, they should just issue something that says there's no debt, and then I can go away. Now, I'm suing them in other things, but on this particular thing, I will go away if they say there's no debt, but they have not said that, and I believe that requires you to order the remand. Thank you.
Okay. Did you have a question, Judge Kirk?
No, I didn't.
Okay. All right. Well, that concludes our argument this morning. The case is now submitted to us, and we will issue our decision within the statutory timeframe. Thanks to both attorneys.